We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. This is Focus 580, hour two of the show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for our program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Jason Croft is at the controls this morning. Well, it's certainly true that a credit card can be a great convenience. In fact, some people might argue that it has nearly become a necessity. But having that plastic card in your wallet or your purse also has some hidden risks. This morning, we'll be talking about some of those risks with Nick Bork. He is manager of the Safe Credit Cards Project at the Pew Charitable Trusts. They looked at hundreds of credit cards issued by 12 of the country's biggest banks, and they found that all of them used practices that were deemed unfair or deceptive under Federal Reserve guidelines. It's their conclusion that while Congress has passed legislation making credit cards safer, well, Americans are actually still waiting for that new law to protect them. This morning in this part of Focus 580, we'll be talking about what you can find in a recent report that they put out. The title of the report is Still Waiting, Unfair or Deceptive Credit Card Practices Continue as Americans Wait for New Reforms to Take Effect. This comes out of the Pew Health Group. It's something that you can read online if you go to their website. And also, as we talk this morning, questions, they are welcome. We ask people just to be brief, and we hope that way we can accommodate as many callers as possible. But questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line. Good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. At any point here, questions certainly are welcome. Mr. Bork, hello.
Hello.
Thanks for talking with us today.
Glad to be here.
Would you like just to maybe talk for a moment or two about the Safe Credit Cards Project?
Sure. So we're a part of the Pew Charitable Trust that focuses on consumer product safety issues. And we look at financial products like credit cards kind of through that prism. And the main question we have is, if somebody gets one of these products and they use it the way that they're supposed to, more or less, and with a credit card I'm talking about, you know, you make transactions at the store, maybe you take out a cash advance or a balance transfer, you pay on time most of the time, maybe as most people do, maybe you're late once every now and then, or you're over limit every now and then. What happens when you're using the product the way that you're supposed to? If serious harm can come from using this product, then we are interested in looking at that and interested in finding a way to stop that so that these products, in a sense, become safer. So with credit cards, we've been looking at them for the past 2.5 years or so, and we developed a set of safe credit card standards, and we've been advocating for getting those standards implemented into laws and regulations, and voluntarily for that matter, to try to make the product safer.
The Federal Reserve apparently has been at least going back to last year, has been looking at the practices of credit card issuers and found real reason to be concerned. And I think even in they use a word like harmful to describe the possibility of what can happen to people and families as a result. Just what sort of when the Federal Reserve talks about practices that are quote unquote unfair or deceptive, what is it that they're talking about?
They're looking at, I would say, two basic things. The first is you use the word harmful, and that is a word that they use. And harmful, when the Federal Reserve uses it, kind of means will it really cost people a lot of money? Will it lead to surprises that can make it difficult for them to pay on time, maybe cause some cash flow problems? Or is the deck sort of stacked against them? Are they using these products and getting charged in ways that they just don't understand and that are being manipulated by the provider in order to really maximize the amount of charges that these people have to pay? And when the Federal Reserve says something like unfair or deceptive, they're sort of building on that idea, and they're saying if a practice is unfair or deceptive, it is seriously stacked against the consumer such that there's really no way that somebody can get adequate disclosure and make an informed decision because the system is so set against them, the product is designed so much against them that they're being led in directions that they really can't understand or make good decisions about.
Yeah. Well, we'll want to talk about this in detail and some of the things that you found when you took a look at issuers and cards, and you looked at things like rates and how they raise rates, and looked at things like penalties that are charged if you go over your limit or if you are late. But to take a step back, is it the case that I would expect that it would be the case that issuers would lay all of this out to consumers in the agreements that, you know, dictate the terms of having that credit card. And so is it a case that they're not actually telling people about how all this works, or is it the case that they have somehow managed to convey that information in a way that's very difficult to understand? People, I'm sure, have had the experience of getting these very long documents in very fine print. They may not read them very carefully. They may not read them at all. So maybe it's not a case that they're not telling people that, but they're also not doing it in a way that's very clear and straightforward and easy to understand.
Well, it's sort of all of the above, and I'll give you two examples that I think illustrate this. Mm-hmm. One is most credit card agreements contain a term that says something like, we reserve the right to apply payments in any way that we choose. And somebody can read that and think, okay, fine. But they don't really understand what that means. What it means is that the credit card provider can take any money that you send them, and they can decide which balance to pay down first. Many people will use their credit cards for various different reasons. You know, sometimes you're making purchases at a store, and the credit card company might charge you, you know, 10, 12, 14% for that purchase. And then some people will do balance transfers, and the credit card company will charge you 0% or 2% for a year, and that attracts a lot of people. That one line where the credit card company says, we reserve the right to apply payments in any way we choose, means that they can pay down that 0% balance transfer exclusively. Meanwhile, anything that you've purchased at the store will be untouched. Whatever payments you send in won't be applied towards that 12 or 14 percentage point balance until your balance transfer is completely paid off. And that maximizes interest charges to you.
Mm-hmm. And that maximizes profits to them.
Absolutely. And the other example that I wanted to mention is, you know, we've all seen, all of us who use credit cards, and that is most of us, have seen these long credit card agreements, and they can extend to 20 or 30 pages sometimes. Usually, or in fact, 99.7% of the time in our study, there's a phrase in that contract that says, we reserve the right to change these terms at any time for any reason or for no reason at all. And what that means is, whatever we've just told you, we can change it by sending you a letter. So if you've borrowed money and we told you it was 14%, well, we can send you a letter and tell you that it's now going to be 28% or whatever number they choose. That's another reason why the disclosures in today's environment are in effect useless for consumers, because you can't make informed decisions based on that. And the Credit Card Act will stop that practice, but not yet.
And this, I think that's an important point, because it seems that you found that you looked at that all of these cards, lots and lots of cards from many issuers. And one of the things that you found was that in most cases, and I don't remember the percentage, but it's almost 100% of the cards allowed the issuers to raise rates at any time. So it makes it seem that it's even if you were shopping around trying to get the best deal on a card, it would be difficult to find a card that didn't have that provision for the issuer.
Exactly. And, you know, imagine you put in the time and the research to find a credit card that's perfect for you and that has the lowest rate and maybe a good promotional offer, whatever you're looking for. You can spend hours doing this, days, and you finally choose it and you start spending money on it, and then you can get a letter a week, 2 weeks, 2 months down the road that says, well, we've changed the deal. And for people who can't afford to pay off the full amount that they've borrowed on that credit card immediately and walk away, right now those people are kind of stuck. Now, I will say that the one part of the Credit Card Act, which Congress passed earlier this year that has come into effect, has created an important new right. And when you see, as a credit card holder, when you see that letter coming from the card issuer now saying, hey, we're going to raise your rates, you now have the right to reject it, and you can tell the card company no. But in most cases right now, that's going to mean you can't use that card anymore to make any further purchases.
All right. Just, I have a caller here. We'll get right to that person, but just real quickly, we talked about these kind of concerns that the Federal Reserve have been looking for this some time. So there was a response from the Congress, from the White House. Members of Congress, they passed this thing called the Credit Card Accountability, Responsibility, and Disclosure Act of 2009. So Congress passed it. The president signed it. This will address some of these problems, but the key point here is that a lot of these provisions don't take effect until next year. So in the intervening period, it seems that issuers are taking the opportunity to do all kinds of things that once this actually goes into effect, they wouldn't be able to do anymore.
Yeah, the window that Congress left before the law takes effect has sort of forced the issue. The card providers are using this time, and our research shows that they're using this time to raise rates and to change fees and to do a number of other things to get in before the law takes effect.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Nick Bork. He is the manager of the Safe Credit Cards Project at the Pew Charitable Trust. And again, if you're interested in the project or you want to take a look at this report that we hear Tier talking about, taking a look at credit card practices here in this country, you can go to their website. Go to the website of the Pew Health Group or the Pew Trusts, one way or another. You can take a look at that. Questions are welcome here too, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Here's a caller in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. I personally have, and I'd like you to comment on the three of these to the extent that you see any problems with them. I have an American Express card, which naturally is, I truly would call a credit card because it just gives me, you know, X amount of credit for a time, and then I have to pay it all off at the end of the month or when the bill comes due. A debit card from my checking account. And I also have a home equity line of credit. Are the banks up to any mischief? I know, as an example, on my home equity line of credit, the minimum payment, which I'm a little annoyed with, but, you know, I know about it, and the minimum payment every month only covers the interest and none of the principal. Comment on those three vehicles, if you would, and if there's any problems associated with them. Thank you.
All right. Can you do that?
Sure. I mean, we tend not to focus specifically on individual companies, but it sounds like the caller, the American Express card, is a card that he pays off every month that he's not using for credit. That's what it sounded like from what he said. So that in that case, he's probably in a relatively good position because he doesn't have an existing amount of debt out there that the company could reprice. And I think that's one of the big problems that people face with credit cards right now. And likewise, because he's paying off that balance every month, he's probably not falling into what some call traps or tricks about how the company is applying payments. So you've got to watch out for those sorts of things. He's probably susceptible to very high late fees, like a $39 late fee if he pays late, maybe an over-limit fee, which most of the cards, over 80% of the cards we looked at have. So if you pay that card on time, you're probably going to be okay. There's not a whole lot of risk if you're not carrying a balance and if the company doesn't let you carry a balance. On the debit card, what you have to watch out for there are overdraft fees. Even though the system for using debit cards is based on an electronic system that can give real-time feedback about whether you're over limit or not, the card companies who run the debit cards will charge you an over limit fee if you go buy a cup of coffee or buy something at the store and it takes you beyond the amount of money you have in your checking account. And those fees are usually in the range of $35 to $39. So pay attention and watch for whether your bank allows you to opt out of those overdraft programs. And more of the banks are, and I think you should be asking for that. And then on the home equity line of credit, I'm not a real expert on home equity lines of credit, but the caller mentioned minimum payments and how it's not really set. The minimum payment level is not really set at a level beyond what just paying interest. Well, you can always pay more than the minimum payment, and if you have the financial capability to do that, I would always recommend paying more than the minimum, because that way you'll pay down your principal faster and pay much less interest over time.
All right. Well, just for a second, I know this is a little bit outside, but I think it's a good point to go back to the debit card just for a moment. That this is just to be clear, this is the card. It looks like a credit card, it's a plastic card, but what it does is it takes money out of your account at the bank. You know, theoretically, you have a checking account. It's like writing a check, except you use the card. And the thing of it is that the banks will. They'll let you withdraw money that you don't have, and then they will charge you a fee for doing it. What you're saying, and I think it's true of a lot of banks, though, you can actually go to the bank and say, look, I don't want you to do that. If there's not money in the account, you should just the card should just say, no, we won't take this transaction, rather than letting you charge that cup of coffee and then saying later, oh, by the way, you didn't have money for that, so we covered it for you, but it's going to cost you $35.
Right. I think that everybody, if they're concerned about this, and people should be, because overdraft fees are a big line of business. I mean, it's the banks in this country make tens of billions of dollars a year in overdraft fees. In fact, I saw an interesting bit of research from the Center for Responsible Lending recently that showed that the amount of overdraft fees that people pay in this country exceed other kinds of purchases, like the amount of money we spend on fresh fruits and vegetables. It's a lot of money. And if you're concerned about this, you should call your bank and ask them not to authorize overdraft transactions. I know my bank allows me to do that, and I've asked for that opt-out. More and more banks are doing that.
Mm. And again, maybe to go back to the issue of credit cards, that's something also should people need to be thinking about, because the issuers will charge significant fees for people going over their limits, and they'll let you do it. I mean, so again, it's not the kind of thing where if it gets up to the limit, then you try to charge something, it'll say, nope, sorry, you're over your limit. They'll let you go over your limit, but then again, they will charge you for it.
Absolutely, and it's not always a simple matter of knowing what your balance is and what your limit is, because it's not always clear from one day to the next how much outstanding credit you have. Maybe you have a hotel reservation that's on your account. You're going to a hotel in a couple days. The amount of available credit will often be reduced in advance before you go to a hotel to make sure there's enough credit to cover that hotel purchase. All kinds of other things like that happen, so it's not always clear where you are in terms of your credit limit. And the over-limit fees on credit cards are $39 in most cases. It's a lot of money, and you can get charged multiple over-limit fees in a single day or a single billing cycle. Going forward, the Credit Card Act, starting in February, will require new safeguards on over-limit fees, but people aren't out of the woods yet. We're starting to see new types of offers that look something like over-limit protection, where maybe even there's a monthly service offer, where you pay $15 a month regardless of whether you go over your limit, and the company offers to give you some kind of protection. We've argued that this would not actually meet the requirements of the Credit Card Act, but it's a gray area, and I think that anybody who has a credit card should be watching for these types of offers and really analyze them carefully, because we don't even know what they're going to be yet. There's a lot of testing and learning that's going to be happening over the next few months.
We have some other callers. Let's, again, talk with someone in Urbana, line one. Hello.
Oh, yeah, hi. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, I've watched this over the last couple of years, and I've known people over my life who've managed credit very well and others who haven't. And other, some of them gone bankrupt because they've got over their head. But I'm not quite sure I sort of look at it, I don't want to sound like a Republican because I'm not, but What about the idea of personal responsibility for your actions? I mean, nobody's holding a gun to your head to, you know, get a credit card to sign this form. Whether your ignorance of it is probably due to the fact, and I've read these things, they are very, lawyers can't figure them out. I know that for a fact, these contracts that you sign. But whatever happened to the fact that if you can't afford it, don't buy it. I mean, most credit card usage is for personal stuff, like dinners, theaters, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's not like buying a house or having an equity loan in your house to fix something up. It's basically personal use. I mean, if you're racking up a couple $1,000 a month buying stuff that clothing you can't really afford, whatever happened to the idea that if you can't afford it, why are you buying it? I mean, this sounds to me that seems to be something in that, the psychology of that. I know maybe the banks are encouraging it. I mean, because obviously they're having some higher percentage of default rates on this stuff. And I gather from reading the journal that that's the next crisis, you know, personal defaults. And what do you think about that? I mean, I hear this stuff, and I know of your organization and people like you, but I'm not categorizing you as negative. But it seems to me like whatever happened to the idea, you know, why are you buying all this stuff if you can never pay it back? Because it's a form of theft, isn't it?
Yeah, the caller raises a fair point, and I know that you're not advocating that for abolishing things like penalties and charges for late fees. So, what do you think about that?
Well, I agree with much of what the caller said. There's a huge personal responsibility issue here, and anybody who uses a credit card has the responsibility to make informed decisions, and if you decide for whatever reason to borrow money using a credit card, you'd better do it carefully, and you'd better do it with the intention and with some amount of reasonable belief that you can pay this thing back. So we agree there. The problem is, and this is something how I kind of framed the issue earlier, we look at this issue as a product safety issue, and if you use the product the way that you're supposed to, can it sort of blow up in your face? And right now, there are two big problems with credit cards. One is the deal's not the deal. I think anybody in this country who you say, let's have a contract, they're going to have a basic idea of what that means. It means one person is going to offer something and the other person is going to accept it, and they're going to agree on a price, and then they're going to execute their deal. That's not how credit cards work right now. People who decide to buy whatever it is they're buying, if it's a television or if it's a new washer and dryer or a new hot water system, when they decide to make that big purchase and use a credit card and they think that they're going to be paying it off at 12% interest, they can very suddenly right now find themselves paying 25 or 30% interest. And that's not fair to them because they made the decision to buy based on one set of information, and the companies right now have the right to change that retroactively. Second big problem is there are big surprises built into these products. And as I said earlier, most people do at one point or another find themselves paying a little bit late because they were traveling, there was some kind of a problem, whatever. Even responsible people who have good records and have every intention of being responsible occasionally pay late. Right now, those people can be penalized far out of proportion to being a little bit late. Their rate can suddenly jump up to 29% or more. And our study, when we looked at every single credit card offered online by the largest 12 issuers, we found that more than 90% of those cards included penalty interest rate increases, and almost all of those were so-called hair trigger. They could double or triple your interest rate even if you're an hour late. And if you've borrowed $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 on a credit card and finally find your rate doubled or tripled, you might get pushed into default. You might not be able to pay that back, and it's not really fair.
And just to add on to that, I think that you're also – one of the things that you advocate is, as I said, you're not saying that issuers should not be able to assess fees, for example, for late payment. But also what you're saying is that if this is somebody who – had a good payment history, and one time they were late or two times they were late, and you'd say, well, okay, a reasonable fee, that's all right. But then you would also say that if that person can then reestablish their f- faithful payment. You know, say they go 6 months, and they always pay it off, and they always pay on time, and there aren't any problems. Then the issuer should be required to go back to the, you know, to take those fees and charges off, to say, okay, you're being good now for 6 months, we're cool, and to go back to the status quo ante in terms of the fees that are being charged.
Right. It should be a two-way street. And, you know, once the Credit Card Act takes full effect next year, these retroactive rate increases on money you've already borrowed are going to be severely limited. Great new protections for people. But for those people who still find themselves seriously delinquent and they get a penalty interest rate increase, the law will provide a partial, we call it a cure period. So if you pay on time for 6 months after the penalty rate is imposed, then the issuer is going to have to restore the original rate. Now, we think the law should have gone further, and we hope the Federal Reserve does go further by making sure that any time anybody reestablishes on-time payment behavior, they get to go back to that original rate. It's really just about making sure it's a two-way street.
Yeah, you have one of the things that you pointed out here is that this legislation was passed. The Credit Card Accountability Responsibility Disclosure Act was passed. The president signed it. The problem, though, is that there was this period between the time that it was signed and it's going to go into effect, and that the credit card issuers, what they're doing is they're doing all kinds of stuff that they couldn't do after it goes into effect. What you're, I think, have advocated is that, or asked this question, well, could the implementation of the act be speeded up at all to make it take effect sooner? And I think that you actually, I've read some testimony that you gave before Congress, and that was one of the things that you talked about. Is there any possibility that such a thing could happen?
Yes. The Credit Card Act has five titles. You know, it covers a lot of ground. But the one part of the act that really focuses on these practices that the Federal Reserve called unfair, deceptive, and the types of things that we've been talking about are in Title I of the act. And you can accelerate those changes today, in our estimation, because really what that part of the bill does is it says issuers have to stop increasing interest rates retroactively. Issuers have to stop imposing hair trigger penalties and penalty rate increases. It's asking issuers to stop doing certain things. And these are the most harmful things to people because they're what take people by surprise and end up costing them a lot of money. So we understand that when you change for the credit card companies, when you change the rules significantly, they need time to respond. And the regulators need time to respond by writing new rules. But when you're talking about these core protections against unfair deceptive practices, we think those can go into effect right away.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Nick Bork. He is the manager of the Safe Credit Cards Project at the Pew Charitable Trust. And if you're interested in taking a look at this report that we've talked about, looking at credit card practices, you can go to their website, the Pew Charitable Trust website, and take a look at it. And questions, comments are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222. 9455. On we go to another caller here, and that would be someone in Champaign and line two. Hello.
Yeah, hi. Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, there's also a social responsibility on the part of the credit card industry. Frontline did a marvelous program, I don't know, 2-3 years ago about the credit card industry. And it was sort of the father of this technique of keeping the minimum payment really low, which, you know, it meant that, you know, you'd never pay it off, never. And I think that was part of the strategy is that, you know, you just keep that balance on and on. And a lot of people, not a lot, but there's a certain percentage of people that don't understand, you know, interest, exactly how it works and to what extent. And, you know, you never get out of debt. And the other one is that people that, you know, with the incomes, they have the lower incomes, they have difficulty, they're trapped. I mean, I think you brought up the particular issue, but has there been any? And I guess finally I heard more what these credit card companies do is that eventually in terms of the bad debt or something, they turn it over to the collection agencies, and one of the biggest growth industries, you know, and, you know, jobs was collection. And they collect 10 cents out of a dollar or something like that. So I don't know whether you want to address any of those topics or not.
Well, I guess I'll start with the minimum payment due issue. You know, there is some guidance from federal regulators that the amount of the minimum payment due on a credit card account should not be should not include negative amortization. And what that means is you should be paying down a little bit of your principal every month, so that in month two you're going to owe less than you did in month one if you're making the minimum payment. But more needs to be done, and I think part of the problem here is that although it's a really good idea to set the level of the minimum payment relatively high in order to make sure that people aren't paying, you know, huge amounts of interest over long periods of time, it also is true that once you set somebody in at a minimum payment level, that's where they become accustomed to and that's where they start budgeting around. And right now, the issuers can double or triple the minimum payment due or more. And this can cause a payment shock to people and put them into default. So it's kind of a balancing act. And right now, the Federal Reserve is looking at some rules to address this. And one of the things that they've said is the issuers have to give notice before they raise your minimum payment due. But so far, the Federal Reserve has not limited how high the issuers can raise your minimum payment due suddenly. And so we're hoping that the Federal Reserve comes up with some rules to soften that impact so that there's not a payment shock going on. And more generally, I think the caller makes a good point. And I said something like earlier that I think fed into that, which was just because the minimum payment due is set at a certain level, it doesn't mean that's what you have to pay. You can pay more than that if you're financially able. You'll be much better off in the long run.
All right. Next caller is in Savoy, line 3. Hello.
I have several credit cards that I haven't used in over a year. Should I cancel those by phone or something, or will they just be inactivated?
Well, it's hard to give a one-size-fits-all answer to that. There are two main things you need to think about. One is it important to you to have those credit cards open so that if you need to make an emergency purchase, you have access to that? And if you have another backup option, say another credit card that you plan to keep open, maybe you don't need that. The other thing is closing a number of credit card accounts at one time can have an impact on your credit score. And you sometimes hear people advise to just leave the account open and let it sit there even if you're not using it. The trouble with that is you need to make sure that you're always looking at anything that the credit card company sends you. Even if you haven't used that card in a year or more, always be on the lookout for notices that they send you, because especially now and in the coming months when we're going to see some changes in the industry, you might find that the account becomes subject to an annual fee that you're going to be required to pay unless you reject it.
Yes,
so
sir.
If you keep it open, watch your mail and make sure they have your correct address.
I've heard that if you don't use your card, they can make a $40 annual fee on one credit card that I have. But I just didn't know if I should close those others, or because I don't use them. When they keep raising the rates, and when they get so high, I open another one that has 0% interest for 6 months or a year or something, and use that one until the rates go up on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I have accumulated several. I don't carry them all, but I just wondered if I should close them.
Well, I think you do want to be careful about how many accounts you have open.
I see.
Because if you have a lot of accounts open, it can be easy to miss when they do start charging an annual fee. And you're right, they can start charging you an annual fee at any time.
Yeah, and there's another thing I've noticed, that sometimes some banks will send an invoice and not even have a return address on the outside, so you don't know whether it's junk mail or what. And it can lie around until there's a overdraft, until the due date has expired and not know it.
Right. A lot of people have become accustomed to ignoring junk mail. But when the bill or the change in terms notice looks like junk mail, you'd better pay attention to it.
I've learned that the hard way.
One thing that you could do, as an aside, is if you have access to the Internet, you can look up the Direct Marketing Association.
Uh-huh.
And you can, on the Direct Marketing Association's website, you can find a way to put yourself on a list that asks people not to send you junk mail.
Oh.
So that can limit the amount of junk mail you get and limit the amount of information you have to sift through.
Direct Marketing
Association.
Okay. Thank you for that information.
Well, thank you. Well, just to make the point again, I think it's a good thing for people to hear that if people think that it might be a good strategy, say they get an offer for a credit card and it has a very attractive introductory interest rate, to apply for that card and get that card and use it until that rate changes and then find another one with an attractive introductory rate, cancel the old one, get the new one, and do that repeatedly. As you say, actually, that's not a good strategy if you're concerned about your credit rating.
Right. And just in general, that strategy can backfire, particularly if the account is designed in such a way to kind of, for lack of a better word, to kind of fool you. I mentioned earlier that because of the issuers can apply your payments in any way that they want, if you take out a balance transfer and you transfer in a debt that you owe on one card into a new card with a 0% promotional rate, and then you go to the store and you use that credit card to buy things at the store, well, anything you buy at the store is going to be hidden behind all of that balance transfer balance, and you're going to be paying interest on it until your balance transfer balance is gone. And even next year, after the Credit Card Act takes effect, it's still going to be a problem because the law will still allow the issuers to take your minimum payment amount, whether it's $100 or $200 or whatever it is per month, and apply that first to your low balance transfer offer. And the net effect of it is you end up paying interest in ways that you probably didn't predict.
All right.
So watch out.
About 10 minutes left, a little bit more in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Nick Bork. He is the manager of the Safe Credit Cards Project at the Pew Charitable Trust. Questions, welcome. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Next caller is in Champaign in line one. Hello.
Yes, I may have a situation that's sort of the direct opposite of many people. I'm too good with the use of my credit card. I pay it off almost as soon as the bill comes to me in full. I have never been late, and I recently received information from Bank of America, my credit card issuer, that I would be subject to an experiment where people like me would have to pay an annual fee. And if we didn't want to pay this annual fee, we'd have to surrender our credit card. Have you heard of anything where your credit and your behavior is too good that you still can be punished? And another thing, they also reduce my credit limit by 50%.
I think the kind of thing that the caller is talking about has become fairly widespread within the last, I don't know, 6 months to a year. Isn't that right?
Yeah, we saw in our research that annual fees have become slightly more common in the first half of this year. Maybe is not entirely a surprise. The credit card companies are trying a lot of different, I think the caller even used the word experiments, to see how they can maintain the levels of revenue and profit that they've become accustomed to, even as the new law starts to come in. It's perfectly legal and acceptable in most, in legal sense of the word, to charge an annual fee. And you're going to be seeing a number of card companies charge annual fees or charge these over-limit protection fees that I mentioned. It's a time when you have to watch what the card companies are doing. And remember that if they add that fee, especially now when they're kind of experimenting and you don't like it, you should call them and tell them that you don't like it, because if enough people call in, they'll listen and they'll stop charging the fee.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. And as far as the other kind of practice, and I think that we have heard about this, that for whatever reason, let us say you have a person that doesn't use their card very much, or maybe it's the case with the previous person that they use their card, but they pay the balance off in full every month, so the company's not making any money off of the interest. And so the issuer is saying to the cardholder, well, you know, we said your credit limit was $5,000, but we've decided, you know, you really don't need that much credit, and we're going to reduce your credit limit to $2,500, you know, just to pull some figures out of the air. Is there anything that would restrict their ability to do that, or is it always up to the issuer to, at any point, if they want to, change your credit limit?
It's pretty much up to the issuer. And, you know, I think it's natural for people to take that kind of a move personally. You know, what did I do wrong in order to justify you lowering my credit limit? But I think right now the issuers are doing a number of different things to evaluate their portfolios. And one of the things they're doing is simply cutting a lot of interest rates, credit limits across the board. And they're doing this because when they look at their spreadsheet to see how exposed they are to credit risk at the wide level over millions of accounts, they decide that they want to lower that number just a little bit, and that means they cut some people's credit lines. If you find that you need more of a credit limit, then call and ask for them to raise your limit. And if your credit history is good and if you've been using your card very responsibly, then there's a good chance that they will raise it if you need it.
All right. Next caller is also Champagne, line two.
Hi.
Yes.
This is great discussion. I wish we had several hours on it because there's so many different aspects to it. But I would like you to comment a little bit how people can become educated about using a credit card properly, because I don't honestly understand how any young person is supposed to figure this out, and it will impact their lives forever. I read those things over repeatedly, and I find myself even reading them maybe two or three times thinking, oh my gosh, moron alert, nobody can figure this out. It also seems to me as if you would use one differently at different stages in your life, because I'm not sure your credit rating matters a ton if you're 70, but I could be wrong about that. But I would also like you to address briefly and just comment on how somehow banks have become the enemy to us. In many sort of sneaky, diabolical ways, they've begun some really unethical practices as if they're trying to catch their customers. And I guess it's generated a lot of profits, but it sure does make them a strange part of the American economy. I'm just going to hang up and listen, and how the heck do we get educated about how to do this properly? Thanks again. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you. Well, that is the ultimate question, or at least it's an important question.
Well, we could spend hours just on that question alone. In terms of how to get educated, it's a serious issue. And the fundamental lesson that people need to understand about using credit is that nothing is free. And when you're borrowing money from somebody, they're doing that because they want to make money off of you doing that. And you have to protect yourself. So the way to get educated about what's going on with a credit card, I think, is to start with first principles, first and foremost. Understand that it's not a particularly good way of borrowing money if you can avoid it because it's expensive. And as one of the callers earlier referenced, you probably shouldn't in general be financing near-term consumption like going out to restaurants using credit cards. It's okay to use a credit card at a restaurant, but if you're borrowing that money and you're not paying off your bill at the end of the month, you should really think carefully about how smart it is to borrow that money. And for some people, it makes sense for whatever reason. But for a lot of people who are living, you know, paycheck to paycheck and close to the bottom of their bank accounts, and they're borrowing money on their credit cards, you just need to be personally responsible about the usage of credit. And that's kind of the big picture point. With credit cards specifically, you just need to know that you need to protect yourself. There are fees. If you pay late, for example, you're going to pay a $39 late fee in most cases. But it's not just a late fee. It has lots of other consequences. Your interest rates can go up. Your credit limit can go down. Your credit score can be damaged. So you need to do whatever's possible to not give the credit card company the opportunity to penalize you. And that means being responsible and paying on time and not overspending.
And is it possible that there might be a requirement placed on credit card issuers in the documentation that they send out to customers that it be made as clear and simple as possible so that people can read these things and understand the terms of the agreement?
Well, something was done a number of years ago. It's called the Schumer box. And if you're shopping for a credit card, you will see in the legally mandated disclosure that comes with that a box, a table that says here's the interest rate and here are the fees that can apply. I think that was a good innovation because it does a pretty good job of summarizing the price, if you will, of this card. A lot of the problems lately have come in terms of what can happen outside of that box, in terms of when do issuers have the right to change the contract and raise rates and apply payments, things that are more difficult to understand. And frankly, I'm hoping that the policy accomplishments that we've had via the Federal Reserve and via Congress enacting a new law will take care of a lot of those problems so that people can focus on the Schumer box, that summary of pricing, and rely on it a little bit more.
Okay. That named after Chuck Schumer?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Okay, we'll go at least one more, and that would be Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hello. I just have a quick question. You may have already addressed aspects of the question. I have one credit card currently, and it has a fairly large credit limit on it. I would like to change to a different card, but I don't know about canceling my old card. If I just don't use it, it sits out there with this, you know, $18,000 credit limit or something, and I'm afraid it would compromise my credit score by, even though I'm not using the card, they could say, well, you could use it. You could spend this amount of money, and I'm confused, I guess, on whether to cancel cards, return the card, or what to leave just unused. And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you very much for the program.
Okay.
So I think what this question is getting at is, what types of things affect my credit score? And first of all, one of the biggest aspects of your credit score is how often you've paid on time and whether you've ever been late or seriously late in paying your bills. So as long as you're good there, you're probably starting from a good point. Another key factor in your credit score, though, is how much available credit do you have? And in this case, we're looking at $18,000 of available credit plus whatever other credit cards or other lines of credit you might have. So if you're looking at changing your card, one tactic you can use is to look for your new card, find the one that you want, and if you decide that you want to get it, you apply for it, and you get it. And if the credit limit that they give you is similar to the one that you had before, you can close that old account at that point, and the net effect will be that you still have roughly the same amount of credit outstanding, and your credit score should be reasonably stable. You might have a slight drop in your credit score for a short period of time because you've just opened a new account. But overall, if you keep relatively the same amount of available credit on your profile, you're going to be okay.
Well, it is the case, or at least it used to be the case, that issuers, what they would do over time is, if you're a good customer, depending on how they define that, is they will over time raise your credit limit. And I suppose there are some people who would have cards that have very high credit limits who would say, you know, I don't need all that. Is it possible or is it advisable to go to the issuer and say, and actually say to them, would you please reduce my credit limit on this card?
You know, I can't give a good answer to that because there's so many factors that go into a credit score. If you've got a clean credit history and you've got a number of credit cards and maybe a mortgage and you've been on file with credit for 10 or 15 years, maybe it doesn't matter if you ask the credit card company to lower your credit limit. But if you have a pretty thin file or you haven't been using, you haven't had a credit card account or mortgage open for a long time, you might want to pause because you might want to make sure that you have that available credit on your profile because that's how you build up a good credit score over time.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're at the point here we have to finish. Any sort of last thought that you'd like to leave with folks?
We've talked a lot about credit scores today, and I want to make sure that people understand that the first and foremost thing you should be thinking about is being responsible and don't take out too much credit and pay the credit that you have on time. If you do those things, you're going to be okay in the long run. If you start focusing too much on your credit score, then you're going to start facing challenges like, should I pay this annual fee on this credit card that I don't use? Or should I accept this higher rate that the credit card company is offering me because I don't want to close this account? Don't get too caught up in that decision. Look at your credit score periodically to be responsible, every 6 or 12 months maybe. But don't make major decisions based solely on thinking about what it might do to your credit score.
All right. Our guest this morning, Nick Bork. He is the manager of the Safe Credit Cards Project at the Pew Charitable Trust. And you want to look at the report we mentioned a couple of times on practices in the industry, you can go to their website, the Pew Charitable Trust website, and take a look at it. And thanks, Nick, very much for spending some time with us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thanks. And by the way, the Senate and in Congress might act to move up these safeguards sooner, and you can call your senator and ask them to do that, and they do listen to those calls.
All right, very good. Thanks very much.
Thank you.